Accession number 27185, Reel 9.
Anyway, we're continuous on coming up at some stage.
Major Barras, Reel 9. You're telling me what sort of rate of movement was expected of the battalion in its buses. I think you said something like 12 and a half miles.
That was the normal laid down speed for military movement, with a break of 20 minutes, I think it was, every 2 hours. In those days, something like that. Whether it had come into operation at that stage, I don't know, but that is the timing that's in my mind.
Was there ever an invasion scare in which you got involved? Were you ever mobilised and alerted really to go to the south coast?
No, we never moved out of where we were. As I say, the Battle of Britain was going on at this stage. We used to go down to when we went on exercise, we used to go down to the pubs in the evening, mixed with the civilians, and listen on the radio to the latest scores of aircraft shot down or barges which had been sunk over in the other side. And then, of course, there was Churchill's speeches, which we used to listen to at that time as well, on occasions.
What sort of effect did they have?
I think they were very inspiring. I mean, the way he has the knack of oratory and putting it across to the common man in the street is what's expected of him. I think, in a way, he said what we expected him to say, because I never heard of anybody who ever thought of giving in or... that we were going to lose the war. Nobody ever considered we were going to lose one. We won all the others, didn't we? So there's no question of losing wars, even amongst the civilians.
Did you think that the invasion threat was a serious threat? The Germans might attempt an amphibious assault?
Oh, yes. I think it was most of us. We had to. We couldn't dismiss it and say, well, we're doing all this preparations and everything, just on the off chance he might do it. I think, no, at that stage we were convinced that an invasion would take place later sometime or other.
Did you have any idea of where they might try to make their main...
Well, we assumed the south coast, southeast coast somewhere, because they had to ensure that they got air cover. Mm-hmm. And, of course, their aerodromes they were operating from aerodromes along the coast, Channel Coast in France. And also, of course, they didn't have any experience of amphibious operations. And I've often thought since, when I think about these things, whether they would have succeeded in landing many troops there, because they were depending on barges which they brought down through the canals and various places. They had to adapt them. I imagine them all in the harbours there, being hammering away and putting things on. For beaching on the other side, on our side. And then they had to get them across the channel, of which they'd had no experience whatsoever. And even if they'd perhaps got enough air superiority to enable them to do it, I often wonder whether they would have been defeated through their own lack of experience, let alone what we could do with them when they started landing on the beaches.
I think they had a plan to try and seize a number of ports in working order by parachute attack, parachute and glider attack, and then bring in the bulk of their forces in ordinary merchant ships and just load them onto land over the jetties rather than attempting an amphibious assault on beaches.
Well, that might have been, yes.
Aware of their own limitations.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, but as you say, that probably was more successful. Could have been more successful.
They did that in Norway.
Yes.
So they'd done that there, and they knew they could do that. And I think they possibly knew that they didn't have any history of amphibious assault operations.
Right.
They attempted that; it was something quite new.
Yes. On the other hand, I suppose if we'd been quick and nimble enough, the paratroops could have been.
Indeed.
We're talking of Arnhem.
It would have been, they would have had to have very good timing and close coordination to make that work.
Yes. And of course there were minefields which we'd laid everywhere.
Minefields, coastal batteries.
Yeah. I mean, the ports must have, would have been easily mined if we'd thought that was going on by aircraft, by dropping mines.
Indeed, possibly facilities would have been prepared for demolition. So
yes, that's right.
It wouldn't necessarily have been easy for them. But
no. They might have succeeded in one or two places, but one wonders how. I mean, there's so many ships you can get alongside in a port, and they're all small ports down there.
Well, Dover would be the main one.
Yes.
And the other question is whether or not they've been able to actually able to maintain a logistic chain of resupply and follow up. So
Of course, we still had the Navy intact.
Indeed.
Vulnerable, of course, to air attack, as we know. But we had submarines, mine layers. I think we could have caused quite a bit of trouble for them. However, never happened.
I was going to ask, what stage did you become aware, or did you think perhaps that they weren't going to attempt an invasion, and that the country would be safe from any attempts?
Not until the winter drew, not till October, I suppose.
Winter of
1940. Although the scare came again in 1941.
Yes.
Until the Germans invaded Russia, then we knew it was off for the time being. But in 1940. We could expect it any time. I mean, we got... I don't know whether we were fully aware of how the Battle of Britain was going. We had to depend on what was told us over the radio. But at what stage the RAF were confident that they had beaten the daylight raids of Luftwaffe, I'm not sure. Because they took to night bombing after that and the Blitz started. And that's where we had problems a little with some of our soldiers, because their families lived down there. So quite often we got word that their families had been bombed out, or their fathers had been killed or something, and they had to go on compassionate leave. But that came later in the winter, of course, or later in October, November. Well, there were daylight blitzes as well, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was there anything you could do to overcome those difficulties that were being caused by the...
Nothing we could do, no. the only thing we could do was to send soldiers on leave, let them go home and sort things out.
Did this cause any sort of permanent damage to morale?
No.
Blitzed out and...
No. It wasn't something we actually saw.
No.
We heard about it. Perhaps if we'd seen it, it might have been different, I don't know. But then it didn't it caused, I suppose, some loss of morale to people whose houses were bombed out. And but by and large, the Londoners' morale stayed pretty steady throughout the Blitz. So why, I'm safely up in Hereford, we should be all right.
Did you see any signs of enemy air activity?
We did. They dropped their bombs around the place sometimes.
They
not as us as a target, but they were going to the Midlands and places like Birmingham, Coventry, and that sort of thing. I don't know why they dropped them in the countryside. Either they didn't want to face up to the defences, such as they were at that time, of these places, or whether they thought they were over the target and just dropped them.
May have been jesting them on the way back.
Well, except we were west of... I don't know what sort of route they would have taken out. They'd have come in from the east, I suppose, and done a swoop round to the west, going and turned to go home. They might have been on their way home, yeah.
Did you have any air defence in your area?
I don't remember that. No, I don't remember.
Did you have shelters at
Harrow? No.
What were you supposed to do if there was an air raid on your... location?
We might well have dug slit trenches for... I don't know. I'm pretty sure we must have done. The only thing we could do personally was to put our Bren guns on the tripods in sort of anti-aircraft mode and fire at them with those. That's the only thing we could do with Tracer. But I mean, if that's providing they slit... they flew low enough and slow enough for us to get at them.
And presumably in reasonable visibility.
And, yeah. But normally they wouldn't be that low, not over the UK. I mean, it wasn't as if they were in the battlefield where they came in low and dropped their bombs and fired. They would come in high most of the time.
How long were you at Hereford? Because it sounds like you were having a period of intense but very enjoyable training and preparation.
Yes.
Did that go on for...
Well, we were doing that. We got, I might say, we got the code word Cromwell came through early in September whilst we were there. I can't remember the exact date. But...
What did that mean? Did that mean...
Well, that meant that invasion was imminent.
What did you have to do on receiving that?
Well, we had to just sleep in our kit, load or have all the lorries loaded and everything ready just to move off at a drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. I have an idea in my back of my mind that CO got the quartermaster and said we'll have early teas, being in a cricket match.
Practical man.
Yes, very practical. Yes. And then everything was stowed away. I don't know how long we were like that. Probably a couple of days, I think, and we stood down again. But we were concentrated and fully kitted, ready to move off within a few minutes.
But what effect did that have on the mood, you know, when you were ready to go at a short notice?
I don't recollect. I don't think much. Just job of work, really, as far as we were concerned. You see, it was a little... We were a regular battalion. I know I mentioned this before, but these guys have been doing all kinds of things all over the world. And we're quite used to this sort of thing. I mean, they weren't used to their country being invaded, but they were quite used to scares and standing twos and so forth.
Alarms and excursions.
So they just took it as another thing to do. We would have had what was called an inline picket, I think, before this, which would have been a company probably at that stage, which was at so many a notice to move whilst everybody else could go out. They stayed in camp and had to be at half an hour, 2 hours notice or whatever to move. But we weren't allowed to go too far away. We had to be back in camp by a certain time. So when we went out, we weren't allowed to go out very far for very long.
When you were doing schemes, up to what level did you go? Do you remember at this time doing any exercises at brigade or divisional level?
Oh, we did them at divisional level. That I do remember, yes.
What sort of...
Well, they were mostly advanced to contact, a lot of it. Mm. I mean, we'd given up the defence attitude, which we had to adopt in France. Here, we were on the offensive. So a lot of the exercises were advanced to contact. And we had a lot to learn.
But what in particular do you think you needed to learn?
Well, movement, how you organize the battalion in such a way that if you hit the enemy, you could deploy quickly. You had an advance guard, you had to have a mixed advance guard, which normally consisted of a company with a section of mortars, a section of Bren gun carriers. I suppose a couple of pop gun anti-tanks was up there as well. A mixed force up in front. Then a gap of whatever it was. Then would come the TAC HQ with the CO, with himself, his IO, probably a couple of orderlies, maps and so forth, and leave behind his main battalion headquarters. Then would be as a second company, because for protection purposes for him. Then another gap, and another company, another gap, another company, and so forth. And then you'd have the B echelon, or we have the A echelon, which consisted of the fighting units or the transport. Our 1500 weight trucks, for instance, would go into A echelon and be grouped together at the back, not move up with us unless we wanted them for any particular purpose with ammunition and that sort of thing. Then you had B echelon, which would be even further back and probably stay stationary somewhere, with the quartermaster, all the three tunners and the seeker messes and all the administration and the battalion headquarters.
What sort of vehicle would the TAC headquarters be in?
Well, of course, I can remember only too well. I mean, there were jeeps and semi-track vehicles and that sort of thing. But at that stage, I can't remember. The CO had a Humber Sniper, I remember. Presumably, he moved around in that still.
What would be the role of your motorcycle platoon in this sort of advanced combat?
Well, we would have gone on ahead.
You'd be a forward screen.
We would have a forward screen, yes, ahead of the advance. It depended, really. Some exercises we probably weren't needed at all. I mean, if it was cross-country, for instance, and they knew where the enemy were, and they were attacking an enemy dug in on a feature in a defensive position, then we obviously wouldn't be needed.
But presumably you would be needed if you didn't know where the enemy were. And
that's right.
How far ahead, if you were doing a forward screening, how far ahead of the advance guard would you be?
Well, on occasions we were probably way ahead. Nobody moving at all. The enemy, the battalion would concentrate in a concentration area whilst we went out to discover what was going on, because at that stage nobody would quite know where, which direction to move, unless they had definite information. But I imagine that if paratroops had dropped, there would have been a lot of false alarms and misinformation coming back, as happens in the fog of war, as it's called.
Did you have to provide flank guard as well, or was it really just a forward recce and screening role?
I don't think we provided any sort of... we weren't really a guard. Mm. We were reconnaissance more than a guard, I think. I don't think on motorcycles at the side we would have been much use as a guard, so to speak. I think it would take the infantry on either in normal transport, which they could get off quickly.
Yes.
Or on their flat feet. So we were, as you put it, we were reconnaissance.
Mm. Do you remember, you know, what form these attacks took when they did the advanced contact and then ran into the enemy?
Well, what would normally was expected to happen is if they were advancing down the road, probably with Bren gun carriers up front. And you got fired at by the enemy, then they would fire back, stop. The company commander would then go up of the advance guard and try and assess the situation as to what to do. He might well have had an FOO with him.
Yes.
From the artillery. Whether we got to that sophistication at this stage, I don't know. But he certainly would have had the mortar platoon, someone from the mortar platoon with him. He had a couple of sections or a section of the mortars with him. It would then be up to him to try and make some sort of an appreciation as to what the situation was.
If that then developed into an attack from the advanced contact in the first place with the enemy, how would the attack normally be developed? Was there a standardised battle drill for the battalion?
Well, battle drill did come into it because we had battle schools later.
Yes, but before this time.
But before then, I think we developed the stage where you had... You have to have a firm base with one platoon, and the other platoons would have done, the other two platoons would have done the attacking. But of course, if it was known from either air reconnaissance, or we may even have had armoured cars in front of us, we don't know, that the position held by the enemy was previously known, for instance, that it was heavily defended, then it was as soon as the advance guard had come up as far as they could, then it would probably be either a battalion or a brigade deployment. You had to make an appreciation as to how strong the position was and what strength of force was going to be necessary to take it.
And what form would the attack take if, say, were a company level? If it was decided that the enemy could be dealt with by the company, you said you'd have one platoon as firm base.
Yeah.
How would the other two platoons?
Well, it depends entirely on the countryside. Yeah. If it was open, it was going to be a bit tricky, but of course you could then ask for artillery to come down or mortar to cover the advance. You didn't have much chance of doing anything clever, really. It depended very much on the countryside, the defensive positions of the enemy, whether they were on very high ground and dominating it, or whether they were stretched out to the flanks for some distance, in which case it wouldn't be a company attack. But if it was a small hill, say, which was the enemy were holding as an outpost or something further back, then you would try and work your way around the flanks. Maybe both flanks or one flank. I'm in the back of my mind, of course, the thing what would have should have happened was to do a feint on one flank and go and tack around the other. But,
you mentioned that you might have an FOO up, in which case, presumably for exercise purpose, you would assume artillery support going down on the enemy position. Was there ever any theoretical or practical consideration of cooperation with armour at this stage?
I don't remember any at this stage. Of course, the steep hills of western Hereford and eastern Wales, wasn't suitable for the deployment of armour, really, because the roads mostly ran through defile, which were where they could have been ambushed quite easily. So perhaps not having armour there didn't matter. But I don't remember armour being there, no. It wasn't until the Churchills came in later that I do remember some armour.
And what about air? Did you ever think in terms of getting close air support part of your attacking plan?
It may have come into the plans, but we certainly didn't get any. They were too busy fighting the Luftwaffe down or else at that stage. There were times later, I remember, two or three years later, when we were on Salisbury Plain, we used to get ground support from the air, but not now.
So that was practiced later, but not when you were at Hereford?
No. I don't think it came into our thinking at that stage. I mean, we must have learnt lessons of the Luftwaffe's predominance on the battlefield.
Indeed, you'd had experience at the other end of it, hadn't you?
That's right. So, I mean, the lesson was well and truly learned. It was merely a question of developing it, which took time. And, of course, the availability of aircraft, which was something that had to be considered.
So you were running this platoon, and then I think what happened to you after that was you mentioned I think you went to Worthing. Was
this? No, we went to Leominster after.
You went to Leominster.
Yeah, that was in October.
Yes.
At this stage, I ceased to be. I don't know quite what happened to the motorcycle platoon after that. I think it was probably quite rightly demobilised.
Well, it sounds as though it was a rather useful subunit to have.
Oh, it would. Yes, it would have been in the. It was useful at that time for that particular purpose. But come the winter, and no threat of invasion, and there wasn't any point in keeping motorcycles riding around the place using up petrol, which was in short supply.
Do you remember if it was ever thought of that, you know, it might be a good thing to have a motorcycle platoon as a permanent part of the battalion?
I don't actually, no. No. I don't think it would have been. In fact, I know the Germans used motorcycles quite a lot. I don't believe they were part of the infantry battalion, so they were probably part of armoured divisions. I don't know. Armoured regiments.
They had them in the Panzer divisions in the reconnaissance.
That's what I mean. Yes, I don't.
Troops, yes.
Unless they were, I don't believe they were part of the an infantry battalion. They were probably attached to armoured regiments. I don't know.
And you didn't carry on with them. What were you doing at Leominster? What was the?
Well, we went into what was would have been called in Wellington's day, sort of winter quarters. And we stayed there until about February. We took over a hotel there, I remember, the officers. I know that because I, in one of the letters I wrote, I said we're in an old hotel here, which we took completely over, which was very useful because we had all the rooms upstairs, and then the mess downstairs. I'm ashamed to say I can't remember where the soldiers were, which.
Were they in billets or?
They were probably, well, I think some of the senior NCOs were in billets, and then we would probably have taken over village hall. Well, we were in Leinster, so there's no question. We've found halls and that sort of thing to take over and put users' barrack rooms. But exactly whether we were all in Leinster or whether some were outside, outlying villages, I don't know. But certainly we were. And whilst there, I was sent to Birmingham before Christmas, this was, in charge of 150 blokes, 50 from each battalion in the brigade, to go and help sort the Christmas mail. Now, why they put a second lieutenant in charge of 150 men, I don't know.
Why would they send soldiers to sort the Christmas mail?
Well, I suppose there were shortage of
yes.
of manpower at that stage. But we went there. We got bombed for our trouble.
Very unseasonal.
Yes, I remember I read a letter which I'd sent home, saying that we got bombed now and again. And I said, I've just opened the door of my. We were in huts there. I don't know, in some. Barracks, I suppose, put my head out of the door. This is an evening, and a bit of shell fragment whizzed past my nose. So I closed the door and went back and sat by the fire.
What was the battalion doing when it was in Leinster? Was it still carrying on with the same sort of training? Or
we did quite a lot of training. I remember there was a lot of snow at that time.
Yes.
I was, and in January, after I'd done my stint at the. In Birmingham, we were there for, I think, about a week. I then went back to Leinster, and I was made battalion IO.
So was this your first new appointment then after the motorcycle platoon?
I can't remember. I don't think so because I must have gone back to my company after,
yes.
Because otherwise I wouldn't have been put in charge of this.
The
mail
sorting party,
yes.
What were the duties, the main duties of the battalion IO at that time? What did you have to do?
I have to say I soon went on a course to find out, but what we were doing, what a battalion IO's job is to keep the battalion commander informed of what he knows about the enemy, chiefly, and the dispositions of our own troops. Keep his map up to date with China graph pencil on talc. Read all the sitreps that came in from the front or the back. To make up a log, keep a log going. I had a section of a sergeant and two corporals, I think. I had a motorbike still as a battalion IO. I was responsible for disseminating information as well down to companies. I also had to collect together anything which was sent to us by higher authority on how to identify enemy units, what corps or regiments they belong to. We had pamphlets on that. Aircraft identification as well. We had the silhouettes, the black silhouettes of all the German aircraft. I remember on some occasions I used to have to go off and find follow-up reports of signalling which had taken place, and only to discover that they were railway signals, I remember. I had to have a pretty good knowledge of the countryside as well.
The terrain,
yes, that's right, as to where to go, what the roads were like, what the countryside was like, so that if we had to go out and deploy, I had a good knowledge of what it was like out there. It was a full-time job, actually.